A blue sign hurtles through space toward a green planet. Turner. Now, a logo of a thick-maned lion framed by a ring of film, Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Now, against a sky-blue backdrop, a gold pin depicting an anchor, a shield, and wings sits in the lower left corner. Titles appear in Metrocolor. John Wayne as Frank W. Spig Weed. Dan Daly as Jughead Carson. Maureen O'Hara as Min Weed in The Wings of Eagles. Copyright 1957. Co-starring Ward Bond as John Dodge, with Ken Curtis, Edmund Lowe, Kenneth Toby, James Todd, Barry Kelly, Sig Ruman, Henry O'Neill, Willis Boucher, Dorothy Jordan. Screenplay by Frank Fenton and William Wister Haynes, based on the life and writings of Commander Frank W. Spig Weed. Music score by Jeff Alexander. This film has been described by the Media Access Group at WGBH with funding by the U.S. Department of Education. Described by Christopher Flowers, Dutch Priest, and Carrie Danahy. Read by Pat Lentz. For more about description, call DVS at 1-800-333-1203. Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer Studio gratefully acknowledges the generous and full cooperation of the Department of Defense and the United States Navy in the making of this motion picture. More credits appear. Produced by Charles Schnee, directed by John Ford. This motion picture is dedicated to the men who brought air power to the United States Navy. One such man was Commander Frank Spig Weed. The flying records he smashed helped win him the lasting respect of his fellow Navy men. The screenplays he wrote helped him win the lasting respect of his fellow writers in Hollywood. Now, on a sunny lawn, Navy officers in dress white uniforms sit and stroll an outdoor party set with white tables and chairs. Women in pastel spring dresses and broad lacy hats mingle. The partygoers form a line to shake the hands of a silver-haired admiral and a colleague in a green army uniform.
I guess down at Pensacola they still talk about the day of the admiral's tea party. It was one of what came to be called Spig's Big Days. Spig Weed and I were in Annapolis in World War I together. But all along, Spig knew he wanted to fly, and I knew I wanted whatever Spig wanted.
Elsewhere.
So we wangled our way into the first regular flying class the Navy ever had.
Not bad, not bad, not bad.
Question, Mr. Dexter?
The same question, Mr. Weed?
The same question, sir.
Same answer, Mr. Weed.
I suspected as much, sir.
What was the answer, Mr. Weed?
We are not to engage in solo flight until our instructor feels we are ready, sir.
And the reason, Mr. Weed?
Planes and funerals are expensive. They cost the taxpayers money, sir.
Attention! I shall see you at the Admiral's Tea Party. Dismiss!
The Navy pilots disperse.
Come on, let's go.
Spig, will you quit riding him?
On the dock, two sailors notice several Army officers with high leather boots and spurs approaching. The officers look over a Navy seaplane floating on its pontoons. A short, red-headed officer taps a cigar-smoking sailor.
Hey, can these things really fly?
Where did you fellas leave your motorcycles?
What?
Mac, there's no smoking on the base.
What about you?
Cigars only.
The officer flicks his cigarette away. Spig approaches with his friend.
How do you like that? What's the Army doing around my plane?
Who cares what the Army's doing? Spig, men told us 3 o'clock. She's waiting. The Admiral's tea?
Hey, you!
Spig hurries over to the short officer inspecting his seaplane.
You want to buy it?
This pile of junk, can anybody get it up in the air?
Now, why don't you just hop right up in there with me and we'll find out?
Now, why don't we just do that?
The officer steps toward the plane and slips into the water. Spig yanks him up.
Trip over your spurs. Put your foot here. 1 foot there. Back over here now.
Spig, you idiot!
Jughead!
Let's go!
Go where?
Taking the Army for a ride.
Oh, you're taking the Army for a ride, just like that, huh?
Just like that.
You've never been at the controls of this thing by yourself before. And right now, this minute, you owe 6 payments on your furniture, 3 on your Stutz Bearcat, and 2 on your baby. You know what happens if anything goes wrong? If your general court-martial, they'll kick you out of the Navy, and I'll wind up a second-class seaman the rest of my life, just like this dope here.
Think of the future, Mr.
Shut up, Pincus. Big weed. Never listen to anybody else. Just do exactly what you want to do all the time. All right, you want to fly that thing? Go ahead. Go ahead and kill yourself. You'll wind up busted and broke.
I can always join the Army.
Jughead faces Pincus.
Why don't you be quiet just once in a while? Mr. Weed wants to fly. Didn't you hear him? Get a line. Hurry up. Get a move on.
The two sailors untie the plane.
Ready, Army?
Ready, Navy!
As Spig starts the plane's engine, exhaust smoke sputters out and the propeller spins rapidly to life. The plane pulls away from the dock, showering Jughead and Pincus with mist. The other Navy pilots rush to the dock. The plane accelerates forward, its three pontoons bobbing over the waves. Jughead chews his cigar, then squeezes his eyes shut and covers them. As Spig's plane lifts off the water, a woman in a red car pulls up to the dock. She pulls a handbrake and hops out carrying a parasol that matches her powder blue spring dress and hat. The red-headed woman pushes open her parasol and gives a bent section a frustrated tug. She scowls. Spig's friend rushes over to her side.
All right, Johnny. Where is he? I told him 3 o'clock. Did I have to specify what day? Who's that idiot?
She points to Spig's plane, which hops over a dock and boat, dips down, then skims again off the water's surface.
That's Spig, honey.
Spig?
She gapes as the plane banks to its left. In the two seats, the short officer yells up to Spig.
Hey! Hey, how much time do you have?
11 seconds.
What?
11 seconds.
Min and Johnny hurry to the water's edge. Spig's plane soars over some buildings behind them. They duck as the plane buzzes a few feet over their heads and skims the shallows. Min runs into the water after the plane, swinging her parasol. As she wades out up to her waist, she trips and falls over. Johnny moves in after her, and Jughead and Pincus run over. As the plane glides low over the water, it grazes the surface again. Back at the car, Johnny and the others help Min behind the wheel. Three pilots climb aboard.
Jughead's got crash boat.
Yes, sir.
Jughead and Pincus rush off. Min puts the car in reverse. Johnny and the two other pilots wobble, then hold on as she speeds forward. Pincus pushes a boat away from the dock. He jumps in as Jughead steers the boat away, increasing speed. Back in the air, Spig's plane makes a banking turn high above the water, then banks gradually the other way as it passes over a sandy peninsula. On the boat, Jughead waves from the boat and points to the water.
Put it down, down, down!
Hey, there's my crew! Let's buzz them!
Spig grins boyishly. The plane swoops toward Jughead's boat and pulls up at the last second. Jughead gapes helplessly. Now, a man rides on a moving train.
Come here!
A man in a railroad cap hurries over.
Look at that!
Spig's plane buzzes over the boat again, and Pincus shakes his fist happily. Now the plane zips over the train as it crosses a bridge. The two men on the freight cars jump off into the water as Spig buzzes them.
Hey, did you ever fly through a hangar?
No. Oh, no. Oh, come on, fella. No, no.
Neither have I.
Spig pilots his plane through an open hangar. On the other side, he skids the middle pontoon on the cement before pulling away. Elsewhere, Min's car speeds down a runway with the pilots scanning the sky. Spig's plane flies up behind them at the car's level. It passes the car closely on its right side. Spig points down at it as he pulls up.
That's my wife!
Min waves him down. A pilot in the car grabs the unmanned steering wheel and they swerve. The officer taps Spig's shoulder.
Hey! Let me have the stick!
He hands Spig the rear pilot's stick.
The stick! I'm taking over!
Spig throws it out. The officer lunges, but it's gone. Now at the Admiral's tea party, Min's car arrives sputtering black smoke behind him. Overhead, Spig's plane begins to stall. The Admiral and several officers look up from their tea.
What's the matter?
We're out of gas!
Well, set her down, you idiot!
Losing altitude, the plane sputters along. Its pontoons nearly graze several treetops. Spig smiles back at his passenger.
What's this landing?
No, on the water! On the water!
The officer braces himself.
Hang on!
The plane barely makes it over the roof of a white mansion. Min drives through the lawn party, crashing into a banquet table. Red Punch goes flying. The plane passes between two trees. Its wings shear off. The plane's body skims across a swimming pool and halts on the lawn. Officers help the admiral to his feet.
You want me to get set?
The admiral staggers, looking around. Spig pats his passenger.
Sorry, Shorty.
I missed it.
Officers grab Spig.
All right, Spig. Go ahead, get him out of here.
One leans to the army man.
You're alive?
The admiral's colleague recovers. Min jumps into Spig's arms. Scowling, the army officer climbs out of his seat and strides to Spig.
Afraid?
So am I.
Pardon me, ma'am, please.
The army man punches Spig, who falls back. As he gets up, an officer grabs Spig by the belt.
Weed! The admiral would like to see you in his quarters immediately.
Yes, sir.
Two SPs escort him.
Won't be home for dinner, hon.
He kisses Min and swats her rear end.
God, I hope they throw the book at you, page by page. I hope they throw you the...
Captain Hazard?
Yes.
General Ricketts' compliments, sir. He would like to see you at once.
Hazard stands at attention and two MPs march him past Min. He ducks as she takes a swing at him. Johnny catches her as she spins. Later, in a hearing room, Jughead stands before several officers.
And that's all you got to say?
Yes, sir.
Nothing more to add?
No, sir.
The whole truth and nothing but...
Yes, sir.
Carson, do you know that you're the biggest liar in the United States Navy?
Yes, sir.
That's all.
Thank you, sir.
Jughead takes a seat between Spig and Pincus. All wear spotless white uniforms. Pincus winks with approval at Jughead.
Mr. Weed, attention.
Carry on, Jughead, carry on.
As the admiral takes a seat at the table, Spig stands before the committee.
Mr. Weed, from Annapolis... Your commendation for war duty, this is a record that any officer might envy. That is, up until this episode. You've confirmed the facts presented to this board.
Yes, sir.
Is there any statement that you'd like to make prior to the board's action?
Yes, sir.
Make it.
Charges against me boil down to doing something I'd never done before. How else are we going to get aviation for the United States Navy?
This all may be true, but it doesn't seem to have much bearing on this case.
Sir, it is the case. At least it's mine. And I think it should be yours.
Elsewhere, with the ocean at her back, Min wheels a baby carriage through a gate in a white picket fence. She checks the mailbox and pushes past a red rowboat on the lawn. As she walks the path, Johnny appears inside the house's screened porch.
Hi, Min.
Hi.
Hi, Commodore. I borrowed a little old Spig's corn and whiskey.
Sure, that's okay. Well, that's what you got to do. Here.
She hands him some groceries.
What are you all climbing up about, Min? If Spig gets bounced out of the Navy, they'll...
bounced out of the Navy.
She folds the baby's blanket.
Look, Johnny. Spig just joined the Navy. I'm married to it. I run the mess hall. I swab the decks. I kick the rust. You're afraid that they'll kick Spig out of the Navy. I'm afraid that they won't.
Min reaches into the baby carriage and takes the Commodore's tiny hands. She touches his forehead. She feels his forehead and cheeks again, then turns to Johnny.
He's feverish.
Min cradles the baby in her arms, continuing to check his temperature. As Johnny watches with concern, Min holds the Commodore up and looks in his face. Resting the baby on her shoulder, she feels the infant's neck and back. Min follows Johnny into the house. Now, in Min's red roadster, Spig and Jughead come barreling toward the house. Jughead goes flying off as Spig makes a wild turn in the circular dirt driveway. Spig heads back around in a billowing cloud of dust. Jughead pretends to hitchhike. Spig skids to a halt.
Now I owe you my life.
You owe me nothing.
That's what I meant.
With Jughead back in the car, Spig makes one more dusty circle around the driveway, then halts abruptly beside the house. The two friends clamber into the kitchen.
Good evening.
Good evening, Miss Lee.
So they didn't kick you out after all.
Right.
And you spent all of next month's pay celebrating.
Wrong. I won the first DeSolo pool, and I am loaded. No tracks.
The squadron decided that flying with the Army was as close to solo as a sailor could get.
Spig holds up a tiny toy plane.
And this, my Tijan hair, darling, is what I brought for you. First prize.
The Commodore's sick.
The Commodore?
Spig stumbles into the baby's room.
Where's the Commodore? Hiya, little old fella. How you feel, little old boy? Look what your daddy brought you. First prize for the first crash.
He tosses the plane to Min and picks up his son.
Hey, let's get out of there. You know, this crib's getting a little small for the old Commodore.
Spig's grin fades as they touch cheek to cheek.
Hey, Min. This kid is sick.
Spig gingerly places the Commodore in his mother's arms. Later, Spig paces back and forth inside the screened porch, glancing occasionally to the lit windows. Outside, twilight illuminates the baby carriage. Johnny and Jughead hurry to the porch. Spig points his thumb at the windows as they enter.
Doc's in there.
He'll be okay, Spig.
Sure, Mr. Weed. Them little kids get everything, you know.
Yeah, girls, sure.
I had the mumps myself 6 times. It don't mean anything.
Spig resumes pacing.
Spig!
He turns sharply and rushes inside. Min weeps, falling into his arms. As he steps past her, Min collapses into a chair. In the baby's room, Spig talks to a gray-haired doctor.
Sorry, Spig.
As the doctor walks out, Spig stares into the crib. He slams the door and storms into the kitchen. Now on the porch.
Anything we can do?
No. But he can do her some good. Stick around.
Johnny opens the screen door for the old doctor. Jughead solemnly removes his hat. In the dim kitchen, Spig sits on the table and strikes a wooden match. It flares up, and he touches it to the end of his cigarette, then waves it out. Spig draws in long puffs of smoke, exhaling them into the dark room, then tosses the spent match on a counter. Min steps into view from the adjacent dining room. She rounds the circular table slowly, clutching her arm. Spig notices her, and as their eyes meet, he drops his gaze. He takes another drag on his cigarette. Min slouches into a seat at the dining table. Spig gets to his feet. He walks slowly over to Min's side and stands by her as she weeps, face down on the table. Now, in an outdoor ceremony, a group of women watch a parading line of naval officers. Johnny steps up and salutes an officer.
Congratulations.
Thank you, sir.
Johnny takes a diploma and shakes the officer's hand. Another graduate steps up.
Congratulations.
Now, Min admires a gold aviator's pin. She kisses it and pins it to Spig's white dress uniform over his heart. Spig grins, then kisses Min's cheeks as she hugs him tearfully. Now, Spig smiles in an airborne plane's cockpit.
We sort of split up, Spig and I did, after graduation. He became a hotshot pilot, all right. Hotshot with a plane and a baby carriage, too.
He has 2 babies.
In those years, Spig was only little brass. But after all, where would big brass be without little brass?
A headline, Army plans round-the-world flight.
Good morning, sir.
Morning, Jack. Did you see this?
Yes, sir. What are we going to do about it?
Jack, who's our best pilot? Oh, I don't mean the best throttle jockey or the one who flies by the pit of his stomach or by the seat of his pants. I mean our best brain. Capital B-R-A-I-N.
S-P-I-G?
The Admiral lights his pipe.
Get him.
Yes, sir.
Now, Min plods into a house followed by 2 little girls with beach toys. Min dumps a basket and umbrella.
Quiet, kids. Come on upstairs and take your bath. Just a minute, young ladies. Come back here and pick those up and take them upstairs with you. Come on, now hurry up, hurry up. Come on. Go on, get moving. See that you wash yourselves clean.
As the girls run upstairs, Min throws a towel. She stops at the record player and slams it closed. In the kitchen, she finds Spig reading a letter.
Good afternoon, Miss America.
Min gives him a cutesy pose.
Here among your unpaid bills, I find a communication from Washington, D.C.
She pours herself some whiskey.
I'm not going.
Stay broke and keep moving. It's the story of our lives.
Spig, you've got two daughters. And they've lived in seven different houses in seven different stations in seven different years. Back and forth across the country and in and out of it, too. Well, I'm just not going to move them anymore.
We'll have a drink. Pensacola, Coronado, what's the difference between houses?
It's a big difference to me, because I've got to live in them.
All right. One of these days you'll have a nice, big, fine, gold-braided admiral's house, and you can live in it forever.
No, Spig. I'm a little tired. I want to relax a little bit. I want to drink a little bit, and I want to spend a little bit more than we can afford.
Okay, you've had your say. Now let's throw the kids and the bags and the jalopy and get on the road. We haven't much time.
Okay. You take the high road, and I'll take the low road. We'll see who gets to the poorhouse first. But my road leads here, right here. It's like you got a shiny desk with a great big drawer marked Navy, and a big drawer marked Flying, and a tiny little drawer marked Min, etc., 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 and so on and so on. Well, there's not much air in my drawer, Spig, and I'm finding it pretty tough to breathe.
I think you're getting too big for your drawers.
Another headline, Navy planes to race round the world.
No, 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 ma'am. I'll give you a clue. Coronado, California. Gee, like a crap name.
Jughead leans on Spig's desk as he uses the phone.
Stick and stay, bound to pay. That's my way,
hey, Spig. Susie,
mate. Johnny enters the office.
Beautiful?
Is it on the level?
Ask me when we get to Bombay, Paris, or Hong Kong.
Which reminds me, since when have you been cutting orders on me, boy?
Not me, Johnny. Me and Admiral Moffat. Pincus, what's bothering you?
That's my foot, sir.
Every time you win a bet from it's fever.
No, I keep my money in my shoes, and every time I pay it out, it hurts right
now. Knock it off!
It's hurt!
The Admiral enters.
Weed, did you announce this?
Yes, sir.
Do you like it?
Yes, sir. War and football draw the biggest crowds. So now we'll have an Army-Navy race around the world. Sir, the whole country will be sitting in on it.
Congress is sitting in on it. In fact, Congress is sitting on it. They've ordered a special hearing tomorrow for you and me.
Will you shut up and get out the phone, you stupid idiot?
Jughead yells into the phone. He salutes, then returns to his phone call. The Admiral notices Pincus wearing one shoe.
Hello, Pincus.
Good evening, sir. How's the wife?
Fine.
And them lovely kitties?
Fine. Nice to see you.
As the Admiral leaves, Pincus winks at Johnny. Jughead gapes, then quickly returns the phone to his ear.
I got it, Spig. Sir.
He gives Spig the phone.
Hello. Hello. Min? Yeah. Did you get my wire, hon? It looks like we're going to be gone about a month. Oh, you know how I am about writing letters. They all sound like inter-office memos.
Tell you a lover.
Jughead waves his hand, urging.
Looks like we'll be back here a couple of years. Why don't you move on out? Of course I miss you. That's what I'm trying to say. Look, I found a swell apartment on. It'll be just great for the kids, about a block from a kindergarten.
Of course, it'll be a little noisy. It's right near the airfield. My squadron's plane.
Min hangs up and leaves the phone. Spig sadly hangs up at his end. He glances to Jughead, who puffs his cigar.
Anyway, I finally got her.
Well, I didn't.
Jughead pats Spig on the back as the pilot scribbles with a pencil. Now, outside a country club dining room, a maitre d' beckons two waiters over. They carry a large cake into the room. Captain Hazard stands and waves a napkin in the air. The group of dining soldiers stand as the waiters put the cake on a stand. It's decorated with a cake airplane on top of a frosted globe. The icing reads Army Round the World. The rowdy soldiers toast each other under a banner that reads Army Round the World Flight. In the foyer, Spig peeks through the front door. He enters, followed by a dozen other Navy officers. The maitre d's eyes widen as he sees the sailors go to the bar and take drinks off a shocked bartender's tray.
Gentlemen, gentlemen, this is a private party, a private army party.
And a very nice party, too, right?
As the sailors toast, the maitre d' approaches a desk clerk.
Ja? Ruf die Polizei auf.
Was ist los?
Tell them to come right out here. It's an emergency.
Is that beer?
Yes.
In prohibition? Don't you know it's illegal?
I just worked here.
Spig passes the bucket of beer to Jughead outside.
Parson.
Yes, sir.
Compliments of the Army Air Corps.
Sir.
Jughead hands the bucket to Pincus.
Come on, Spig, don't you think we'd ought to blow? We're going to stir up a heck of a mess.
What? Where's your curiosity, Mr. Price? This is a rare opportunity to study the species Homo sapiens.
Spig gulps Johnny's drink.
Subspecies Army.
Outside.
General John J. Pershing.
To Calvin Coolidge.
Spig Weed.
Who's he?
The gentleman who sent us the beer.
Spig Weed.
Mr. Weed.
Sorry.
To Mr. Weed.
Pincus and two Army men toast.
To our landlocked Congress, may they quit smoking cigars for a month and buy us some planes.
Spig drinks, then hurls his glass into a fireplace.
To celebrate being selected as the Army flight team to beat Navy around the world!
As the soldiers toast, the sailors enter the dining room. Hazard sneers at Spig.
Good evening. Good evening.
Spig, let's go on out of here.
So rude. Our host is about to make a speech. Continue.
Thank you. Gentlemen, I think we do well now to make plans for our victory dinner, right? Every race implies a loser as well as a winner. And I think it could only prove once again Army sportsmanship to invite the Navy losers to our victory dinner.
Spig walks to the head of the table.
Gentlemen, I presume that each team will have the same number of men, correct, mister?
Correct.
Each of you then will invite your opposite Navy number. For the occasion, consider him as your big brother.
Spig and Hazard clasp hands firmly, slap each other hard on the shoulder, and shake. Spig holds up his hands.
As a representative of the Navy, I think a few words are in order. Very few. It is 25,000 miles around the world. We expect to finish 12,500 miles ahead of you. End of few words. Thank you.
Wait a minute. The trouble is, mister, you got nothing to fly.
We won't need much more than a kite to beat you.
May I make a suggestion?
Please do.
Hazard removes the cake airplane.
Why don't you fly this?
He crams it into Spig's face. The sailors toss off their hats, which land in the foyer at the maitre d's feet. Spig yanks a tablecloth, sending dishes flying. As he dabs his face with it, the sailors stand ready.
A few more words are in order.
You're our guest.
What manners. We grace your party, we drink your liquor, and I suppose this is supposed to be funny.
A matter of opinion.
Well, the liquor was pretty good.
Spig admires the cake.
And the cake is nice.
He picks it up and smiles at his men.
Right?
Right!
Spig knocks Hazard over with the sheet cake. Hazard gets to his feet, and Spig shoves him away.
Thank you for the party, gentlemen. Thank you, and thank you.
Spig belts a soldier, and a brawl erupts. Several push aside their chairs to fight. As punches fly, one soldier gets flipped over a table. The maitre d' runs outside.
Police! Police!
Jughead stands.
Hey, buddy. Hold it.
He hands a soldier his beer, then punches him out. The other knocks out Pincus.
Let's quit. We're even.
Jughead and the sailor toast. Back inside, a soldier punches Spig, who falls backward. Another sailor throws the attacker over a table. Spig groggily gets to his feet, grabs a soldier by the hair, and belts him. Another army man punches Spig, who falls forward. Johnny knocks the man out and helps Spig up. In a daze, Spig punches Johnny. Now the desk clerk shuts off the lights and runs into the destroyed dining room.
The kitchen!
The servicemen flee the area, some carrying knocked-out comrades. At the front door, the maitre d' watches police officers march in two by two. Spig and Hazard lead the mob of servicemen through the kitchen at a sprint. They dash down a hallway to a set of double doors and burst through, falling into a swimming pool. Later, Hazard and Spig march side by side across the parquet floor of a palatial room. Wearing dress uniforms, each has a black eye and a bandage on his face.
I can't think of an excuse. Not a thing.
I'm going to say that I forgot my wife's birthday. She clobbered me. They can't argue with that.
Sure can't. But me, I can't think of a thing.
They stop at a sign reading, Congressional Hearing Room.
Go ahead.
You go ahead.
You afraid? No.
Hazard leads him through the ornate doors. Inside, Army and Navy officers sit with several men in suits. The Admiral points.
Mr. Weed.
Captain Hazard.
Mr. Weed, Captain Hazard.
Information has reached me through certain channels that you two gentlemen have met.
Just for the record, are we at war? Where did you get those eyes?
I forgot my wife's birthday and she clobbered me.
And you?
Me, I can't think of a thing.
The man at the head of the conference table chuckles, then folds his hands.
Well, gentlemen, your round-the-world race is canceled. Well, the Army flight will take place because the Army asked for it first. But no race.
The Navy appreciates your position, Senator.
Good. You can't win. Might as well be a good loser.
The Senator looks at Spig.
However, I'm not sure the entire Navy shares that view.
Permission to speak, sir?
Fire away.
It's our training. We're not taught to be losers, good or otherwise. And now we are losing carriers that we need and planes to fly from them. Someday we may lose something bigger than that. If you can't develop both services impartially, you're either shirking your duty or you don't know what your duty is.
Well, son, there's a lot of things we don't know. But here's some of the things we do. Now, we've got a country yelling pacifism at us. Disarmament. The world is going to live together like one big happy family. There'll be no more war. The Army and the Navy are going out of business.
He faces the bruised pilots.
Now, you, outside of clubs and bar rooms, you fight maybe one war in a generation. Well, we have to fight those voters every blame 2 years.
The senator glances around the room, then shifts in his seat.
You want us to cancel that flight for the Army?
Well, no, sir. That stunt may get them the bombers they need for their service.
You just want to nail down the Lexington and Saratoga, hmm?
Yes, sir.
Not just a mock-up like the Langley. Well, they tell me there's more than one way to skin a cat, Admiral. That'll be all, gentlemen.
Thank you, sir.
By the way, off the record, who won that fight?
The Army!
The congressmen swoon with laughter. In the hall, a group of women stop Spig.
Oh, boy! Where is the ladies' retiring room?
Right in there, ma'am.
He points the prissy women into the hearing room, then he and Hazard stride down the hall, now in the Admiral's office.
Black eyes, swimming pool, congressman. Now, what's this new scuttlebutt you're spreading?
The international seaplane races, sir. The United States has never won them, nor the Schneider Cup that goes with the winning.
I'm aware of that, Weed.
All right, sir, let's play the races. We'll hit the public and keep hitting them. You okay it, sir, and we'll bring the Schneider Cup home. Fellow with champagne and gem at Donnie Army's throat.
The Admiral paces to a model carrier.
That would be nice. There's only one thing wrong. Why let the Army drink our champagne?
Now, black and white film projects a seaplane taking off. White lettering reads, MGM International Newsreel. U.S. team sweep Schneider Cup races. Navy flyers finish first and second. Cows England. In a movie theater, Min sits watching, seated between two young girls, one blonde, one brunette. They watch the newsreels of the races, which includes the packed grandstands. On screen, a dirty-faced pilot steps up to the camera. Words underneath read, "The winner, Lieutenant David Rittenhouse." He waves. A constable points Spig to the camera. Words read, "Captain of the team, Lieutenant Frank Spig Weed." And others appears below a smiling Pincus and Jughead.
That's your daddy up there with the goggles. See your daddy? He's the one beside Mr.
Daddy!
Frank.
Him?
Yes.
Daddy! Daddy!
Daddy!
You shut up!
Oh, drop dead.
Min pinches the young brunette's chin, then sticks her tongue out at the man herself. She leaves her seat, dragging the two young girls out of the theater. Now at the country club, the maitre d' beckons two waiters over. They carry over a large round cake, and the maitre d' places a trophy decoration on top. In the dining room, Spig overfills a silver trophy cup with champagne. He tosses the empty bottles over his shoulder. Johnny holds up a brass bell, which Spig rings.
This one is for old Dave. The first to cross the line.
Yeah! Spig drinks from the trophy cup, then passes it to another sailor who also drinks, spilling champagne down his front. As the trophy gets passed around the table, Hazard enters the club with his men. The maitre d' gapes at them and tensely massages his neck. Hazard smirks and the soldiers stride in, back in the dining room.
Speech, speech. Give me that cup.
Aventador.
This is a happy cup, inside and out. And here's a toast to all of you who brought it back where it belongs.
Spid gulps from the trophy as the sailors tap their glasses.
You're a great crew, each and every one of you. Even Carson there, who slept all through the race. Oh, I know, Jughead, you were up 96 hours getting the planes ready. But seriously, I want to thank each and every one of you from the bottom of my heart. It was a long, back-breaking job. And those that flew know what they owe to the others. If it hadn't been for the cooperation and the teamwork...
A cake lands in Spig's face. In the midst of another brawl and covered in white frosting, Spig punches two soldiers, then gets decked himself. The manager opens the front door and watches police officers march in two by two. Jughead and Pincus enter the foyer, do an about-face, and head in the opposite direction, avoiding the brawl. Now, Min holds up a newspaper. The headline reads, Weed Price Shatters Seaplane Endurance Record. Her two daughters sit on the floor clipping newspaper articles.
What's a record? I told you it's something nobody else ever did. Would it be a record if Daddy came home?
Min looks at the younger girl.
That would be a world's record.
Min smiles at her two daughters and continues cutting. Now, Spig approaches the front door with a suitcase and a bouquet of flowers. He kicks aside a ball and rings the doorbell. As he waits, he notices a doll carriage on the porch and peeks inside. He turns back to the door and rings the bell again. His two young daughters open the door.
We don't want anything. We're broke.
Spig smiles and they close the door on him. As the girls strut into the kitchen, Spig enters the cluttered house. Standing in the middle of the living room, he gazes around at the cozy, mismatched furniture. He throws his suitcase on a chair and steps over to a desk. As he tosses a doll aside, he rifles through scattered bills and papers. He lifts an empty glass from a piece of notepaper and reads the ring-stained page. He throws that aside and picks up a business card stuck in the ink blotter. He studies the card, then tosses it down on the desk. Pursing his lips, Spig lets the bouquet of flowers drop into a wastebasket. He turns and kicks a pillow across the room. As he starts for the kitchen door, he grabs his coat. He enters the kitchen, where his older daughter cooks dinner and the younger one sets the table.
We've already got a carpet sweeper.
It ain't paid for.
It isn't paid for.
Don't you kids ever read the newspapers? I'm your daddy.
Hey, Pickle Puss, come here.
What is it? Remember this is a pickle man.
Are you the funny man with the goggles?
I sure am, honey.
Daddy!
He hugs them.
And I've got a present for each one of you. Now, there's one for you, and one for you.
They tear their presents open.
Where's your mother?
At the bridge club.
Oh. The bridge club, eh?
They pull out necklaces.
Oh, they're beautiful.
Who's getting your supper?
I am, of course.
Spig stirs the pot on the stove.
You want some?
What is it?
A chicken a la king.
I sure do.
Out of a tin can.
I'm hungry.
Some?
Sure.
Then you just sit down right
there. I was going to.
Shall I call you Daddy?
You better.
Me too?
You too, Pickles. What?
The older one grabs the pot.
Here, wait a minute. Let me take that. I'll serve you. Sit down. Sit down.
Later in the girl's room, the older one jumps into her bed as Spig carries in his younger daughter. He tucks them in and kisses the older daughter's forehead.
Good night.
You forgot something.
What?
Now I lay me down to sleep,
I pray the Lord my soul to keep. If I die before I wake, I pray the Lord my soul to take.
Good night!
Good night who?
Daddy!
The girls settle in and Spig smiles.
Good night.
As he starts to leave, he stops at the door and watches his daughters.
Sleep tight.
He closes the door, leaving the girls alone in the dimly lit room. Later, Min approaches the front door, a cigarette hanging from between her lips. She unlocks the door and wearily enters the house carrying a paper bag. With slumped shoulders, she tosses her hat and purse onto a sofa. As she runs her hand through her tousled red hair, she looks around the tidy room with a furrowed brow. She plops down in a chair and leans her head back. As she takes the cigarette from her lips, she lets out a puff of smoke. Leaning forward, she removes her high-heeled shoes and rubs her stockinged feet and legs. As she massages her calf, her gaze wanders across the room. She gets to her feet and approaches the wastebasket next to the desk. The bouquet stem sticks up from the can. Min grabs the bouquet and studies the blue and pink flowers. Her gaze shifts to the kitchen. She limps toward the door and slowly opens it a crack. Inside, Spig stands at the sink washing dishes. As he sets a glass on the drying rack, the bouquet flies past and lands beside him.
Hi.
Hi.
Home is the sailor, home from the sea, and the hunter home from the hill. Well, they cooked their own supper, and then I threw them in bed.
How'd it feel?
Great, but I blackmailed them. I brought them some beads.
Well, go ahead, get it over with. Ask me where I have been.
I know where you've been. You've been playing bridge. Got behind. The winners go to dinner, and the losers stay to play. I know it is. I was going to phone you, and then I got a cute idea. Thought I'd come in unannounced. To tell you the truth...
Why don't you?
All right. I've been thinking what a heel I've been, about you and about my own kids. I don't know. When I do something, I go all the way. Living, gambling, flying, I tap myself out.
He fixes a drink.
Guess that's the way I want it to be. Maybe even it's the way I am.
Star Spangled Spig. Damn the martinis, full speed ahead, and don't give up the ship.
E pluribus unum. Have a drink. Listen, Min, I'm trying to say I've been a fool. First class, senior grade, gold braided.
So am I.
Okay. Let's change it. Let's grow up before our kids do.
We'd better hurry up.
Spig grabs Min around the waist, swings her side to side, and pulls her into a passionate kiss. Later, they lie together on the couch.
Phone's ringing.
Oh, let it ring.
Why not? It's probably just Washington. Oh, I forgot. Do you know that you are in the arms of the newest lieutenant commander in the United States Navy?
Star Spangled Spig.
And a squadron leader.
All I know is that I'm in the arms of a fella named Spig that I'm nuts about. Hey, how about getting back to your necking with a little more enthusiasm?
Right.
As they embrace, the girls come downstairs and flip on the lights.
Mommy, do you know whose lap you're in?
No.
Daddy's! Go ahead, shake hands with him.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Why don't you go to bed?
Min and Spig smile at the girls and get up from the couch. Later in the bedroom, Min lies sleeping in her twin bed as Spig sits up and smokes a cigarette in the other. Spig glances at his wife and takes another drag. He lets out a stream of smoke as he stares happily at the ceiling. Spig bolts upright and listens. He flips on the bedside lamp and races for the door. As Spig grabs hold of the railing at the top of the steps, it breaks and he goes tumbling down.
Spig!
He lands on his back at the bottom. Min hurries to him.
Spig, what?
She spots his limp body sprawled out at the bottom of the steps and rushes to his side.
Don't move me, Min. Can't. My back. No feeling. Call hospital. Naval hospital.
Spig closes his eyes. Min cries and bites her fist. Now, in a dim hospital room, two doctors look over a set of x-rays. One puffs on a cigarette as they examine the pictures of a man's spine. The gray-haired doctor with the cigarette gives his blonde colleague a discouraged glance. They step over to Spig, who lies stomach down on a table. A bundled-up cloth supports his forehead.
Bilateral paralysis resulting from indicator fracture of the fifth cervical vertebrae.
You mean my neck's busted?
That's it.
How bad is that?
Not good.
What are my chances?
If I operate right away, about 4-1.
What are we waiting for?
Permission from you and your next of kin.
I'm my next of kin. Let's go.
Now in the hallway, Min sits on a bench, wringing her hands. She quickly gets up and paces the hall. Wearing a long coat over her pajamas, she shoves her hands in the pockets and sits back down on the bench. Meanwhile, in the operating room, the masked doctor works on Spig's back.
Scissors?
Scissors.
Several nurses and doctors, all dressed in white, look on as the doctor operates.
Sponge?
Sponge.
Doctor?
Pressure's dropping, doctor.
CC adrenaline.
Johnny and Jughead step forward.
Hey.
Can you hear me, Weed?
Yes.
Open your eyes, Spig. Can you see anything?
No. He's taking a dive.
Jughead goes to Spig.
What's the matter, Mr. Weed? Can't you ever win a fight?
Carson.
Yeah, Carson.
Trying to keep me alive.
That's right.
Well, you're doing it, thanks.
You're welcome.
Get him the hell out of here.
Jughead walks out of the room past Johnny. Later, in the hallway, Pincus approaches Min and pours her a drink.
Man throws under your belt. Make a new man out of you.
Min takes a cup from him and drinks. Min jumps to her feet as the doctors wheel Spig out of the room on a table. A sheet covers his whole body. Min lets them pass, then follows behind them. As Pincus watches the group head down the hall, Johnny approaches. Later, Jughead pushes a wheelchair down the hall. Two nurses watch him curiously as he lets go of the chair and continues into a hospital room. Inside, Spig lies on his stomach. Bandages cover the back of his neck and continue down the length of his spine. As Jughead bends down to look at Spig's face, a young nurse spots him.
Who are you?
Me? Oh, I'm the new corpsman, ma'am. He's signed here to take care of Mr. Weed. Glad to cooperate with you any way you want. And you just did call up. Hey, you're pretty.
We'll see about this.
Yeah, you do that.
Carson.
Yes, sir, Carson. Oh, excuse me.
Why?
Why? Because I'm a new nurse, that's why. I'm going to see you through this little trouble. Now, listen, do you know the fix that you're in?
No. Do you?
Yes, because I figured it out all night, and now I'm going to brief you.
Go ahead. Brief.
He shows him a drawing.
Now, look. This here is a spinal cord. It's just like the main cable on any three-phase circuit.
Yeah.
And when you stunted down them stairs, you busted 5/6 of it.
Can it be spliced?
What?
Can it be spliced?
Oh, well, these croakers around here will tell you it can't be done, but I'm telling you it can. You remember the manual said I couldn't splice rudder cable?
1/6 left.
That's right, and that 1/6 is going to be enough, because we're going to learn that 1/6 to carry the whole load all the way down to these feeder circuits. You know, these medics here never saw no one wire around a bad magneto post.
The doctors enter.
That's true.
Doctor, you heard him. He gives me a chance.
I heard him.
But you don't.
Well, we never give up hope. We'll do the best we can. Carson, when were you busted back?
Hey, Mr. Weed, he recognized me.
Do I have to have him around?
You want him, Spig?
No. But I guess he'll have to do.
I've assigned Miss Crumley to your case, Weed. Fine woman. Fine nurse.
Anything we can do, Miss Crumley, just give us a buzz.
This is Miss Crumley.
The young nurse points to a short, gray-haired nurse. As they leave, Jughead frowns. Now, Min walks down the hallway with the doctors and nurses. They stay behind as she nears Spig's room. Jughead approaches carrying a food tray.
How is he, Carson?
What do you expect? I can't get the guy to eat. He won't sleep. He hasn't eaten a thing. He hasn't touched the orange juice, a piece of toast, soup or something, but he don't want to touch nothing.
Min continues toward Spig's door. Inside, Spig lies with his forehead resting on a block. Rain pours down outside the window behind him. Min enters.
Min?
Hi.
Hi. Kids?
Oh, they're fine.
They know?
Big one does. Little one thinks she just took off again. Oh, she's worn the beads around her neck.
Is it raining?
Yeah.
Those doctors, did they tell you it was no go?
Look, Spig, they haven't given up hope. Don't you?
Oh, it's got all twisted, Min. It's stay broke and never move.
I won't let you believe that.
You always yelled that I moved around too much. Maybe you were right. You know what else you said that was right? Damn the martinis, full speed ahead. Well, you be like that, Min. You be on your own from now on.
Don't talk like that, Spig. You'll be all right again.
Oh,
you'll
don't be... pity me. I never pitied anybody, so I don't want any.
Sorry, Spig. You're right.
And don't pity yourself either. Get out in the world. Be alive. Take your turn. I took mine.
All right, Spig. Let's have it. What are you trying to tell me?
We were just about through anyway, Min. We'd lost it. It got away from us. Whatever it was, and we both remember the good part, the fine time. Let's not louse it up and let it be something bad and hopeless just because we couldn't keep it.
Min clutches the collar of her raincoat as a tear rolls down her cheek.
I'll bring the kids in to see you.
No. I couldn't take it.
Will you tell me when?
I'll tell you when.
Min studies her husband with her tear-filled eyes. Her lips tremble as she gets to her feet and opens the door to go.
Big one. She's like me. Don't let her get away with a thing. Pickle Puss. Little old Pickle Puss. She's like you. Love her hard. She's lost without it.
So long, Spig.
Min steps into the hall.
So long. Good luck.
Spig lies motionless on the table. In the hall, Min lights a cigarette as she ambles past closed doors. She fixes her gaze straight ahead, puffing on her cigarette. With a quick flick of the wrist, she throws her cigarette down and ties a scarf around her head. As she tightens the knot under her chin, her brow furrows and she covers her mouth with her hands. Later, rain streaks the windows in Spig's hospital room. Jughead enters.
Good morning.
Is it still raining?
Rain in California? Guys, don't knock the rain. Rain makes the corn jump up. Cows eat the corn, boom, you got porterhouse. Went over to Tijuana and got some of that panther sweat. Medicinal panther sweat.
Tequila.
Besides, if we didn't have any rain, we wouldn't have any ocean. No ocean, no navy. No navy, no retired pay. You and me would have to go to work.
Jughead strings the tequila bottle onto a clothes hanger and hides it behind the dresser mirror.
Now that brain of yours is like a generator. What we're going to do is generate that power right past that break in your spinal cord, all the way down here to these feeder circuits they call nerves. And we're going to start with this big left pinky. You feel that?
No.
Well, anyway, that's it. Now you start saying, I'm going to move that toe. Come on, mister, say it.
Move. Move.
Come on, say it, mister. I'm gonna move that toe. Say it.
I'm gonna move that toe.
All right, say it again.
I'm gonna move that.
All right, louder.
I'm gonna move that.
Say it again.
I'm gonna move that.
Keep saying it.
I'm gonna move that toe.
Ah, believe it.
Jughead swigs from the tequila bottle.
Say it again.
I'm gonna move that toe.
toe.
Louder, once more.
I'm gonna move that toe.
All right, knock it off. Take a little rest.
Anything happen?
No, not yet. Let's put some oil in the crankcase.
He gives Spig some tequila.
We got lots of time, Mr. Weed. We're gonna... That's enough. We're gonna stick right at this. Start saying it again. I'm gonna move that toe. Let's go.
I'm gonna move that toe.
Come on, loud.
I'm gonna move that toe.
All right, believe it. I'm gonna move that toe. Again.
I'm gonna move that toe.
Believe it. I'm gonna move that toe. Come on, go. I'm gonna move that toe. Go ahead. I'm gonna move that toe. Now, good and loud. Try.
I'm gonna move that toe.
Come on, Mr. Weed. Once more.
I'm gonna move that toe.
That's it. Now you got it.
I'm gonna move that toe.
That's it. Go on.
I'm gonna move that toe.
Go again.
I'm gonna move that toe.
Once more.
Now, Jughead strolls down the hall with a ukulele and a wrapped package. He hops over the feet of two old men in wheelchairs.
Get that man's name!
He enters Spig's room.
Wait, did you see what I got? I kicked myself all the way back from that joint for not thinking of it before.
He unwraps a mirror and puts it under Spig's face.
Whipped. Tell me now, what do you see in there?
Dolores, roommate...
No. Down here. Can you see this?
He waves his hand in front of Spig's feet.
Look at this. Do you see a big pinky?
Yes.
All right, keep your eye on it. And let's get started. Come on, same old thing. I'm gonna move that toe. Go ahead.
I'm gonna move that toe.
Right, say it. I'm gonna move that toe. Come on, mean it.
Jughead picks up his ukulele.
That's right. Now, I'm gonna move that toe. Go ahead. I'm gonna move that toe, right. I'm gonna move that toe, right. I'm gonna move that toe, that's right. And I'm gonna move that toe. One more chorus.
Jughead swings his hips from side to side as he plays.
All the girls chilling got toes, so move it. All the girls chilling got toes, let's move it.
The blonde doctor enters.
Well, move it. All the girls chilling got toes, let's move
it.
Doctor's here, sir.
Still at it, eh?
Johnny?
You know, you can overdo those exercises.
You mean I could kill myself?
No, I'm just saying you could overdo the work.
Well, I don't care too much anymore which way it is. But one of us is gonna give. Either me or that big toe.
You may just be right. You're sleeping better. Eating better. Carson. Yes?
The doctor pulls out a bottle of liquor.
This is strictly against regulations, but I feel it might do him some good.
Alcohols?
Oh, no.
Whiskey. It's intoxicating.
No. Just a few drops.
Oh, no, I couldn't do that.
Orange juice.
A few drops. Yes, and some oranges. Let's not have it for me.
No.
Right. All right, sir. Trust me.
Keep it on your hat.
Yes, sir.
See you, Spig. Keep it up.
The doctor leaves. In the hall, the gray-haired doctor approaches him.
How's your patient?
Still alive.
I'll drop in to see him.
Inside, Jughead hides the liquor behind the mirror.
All right, hit it and hit it hard. I'm gonna move that toe.
I'm gonna move that toe.
Doctor, sir. And Miss Crumley.
Good evening, Wade.
Good evening, doctor.
Well, quite an arrangement.
My idea, sir.
Dolores. Oh, by the way, I was talking to the commander of the base about Carson's temporary duty.
What did he say?
As far as they're concerned, they hope he never comes back. Would you excuse Miss Crumley?
Yes, doctor.
Carson.
Yes, sir.
Nurse Crumley leaves, and Jughead joins the doctor in the hall.
This is against all medical ethics, Carson. But the slightly debilitating effects of alcohol are more than compensated for by the physical stimulation and the marked psychological benefit to be derived.
I was thinking the same thing myself, sir.
In other words, a good slug of booze won't hurt him. I want you to give him some of this.
All of it?
No.
A spoonful at a time?
Yeah.
A little water or orange juice?
Grapefruit.
Grapefruit juice, right, sir. And if it doesn't upset Mr. Weed, we might have another bottle for next week.
We'll see.
Right.
But keep it on your hat.
Trust me, sir.
Jughead studies the 1 ounce bottle of liquor as he heads back into the room. Closing the door behind him, he pulls the cork out with his teeth and downs it.
I can make better booze than that in a bathtub. All right, let's go.
I'm gonna move that door. Come on, Mr. Weed.
That's it. I'm gonna move that too. I'll move it. I'm gonna move it.
Nighttime. Spig lies alone in his room.
I'm gonna move that toe. 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 I'm gonna move that toe.
In the hall, the blonde doctor opens Spig's door a crack and peeks into the room. With a sober frown, the doctor pulls the door shut and walks away. Daytime, Spig lies on his stomach and looks into the mirror underneath him.
I'm gonna move that toe. I'm gonna move that toe. I'm gonna move that toe. I'm gonna move that toe.
Spig's feet stay perfectly still.
I gotta move that toe. I've gotta move it. I gotta move that toe. I gotta move that toe. I gotta move that toe. I'm gonna move it. I gotta move.
Now, Spig lies with pillows under his chin.
More?
Please.
A nurse puts a cigarette to his lips.
Now, you enjoy that nice fresh air.
As the nurse leaves, Spig lets out a breath and looks serenely out the window. In the courtyard below, he spots Min walking away from the building. She stops halfway down the path and looks back at the hospital. Walking backwards for a few steps, she keeps her gaze on the building, then turns away. Spig watches her with narrow eyes. In the hall, Jughead gives the nurse a long flower box, motions for a vase, and points to Spig's room.
Wife!
All right.
Jughead enters the room.
Good morning. Well, look at you. Pretty soft. All you had to do was lay there, look at the little children out in the park. Pretty ships out in the bay.
What are the men with legs doing?
Oh, they're trying to learn to use their heads. The millionaires are back from Florida, and the bums are out of the pool rooms for the summer. What are you reading? Danes, murder, what?
Love.
Who?
Lousy. He writes like he'd use my big toe for a pencil.
You don't like any of the books I bring you, do you? You don't even like the one I swiped from the chaplain. You know, the one that was banned in Boston? You don't like my literature. Why don't you try writing some yourself?
It's not a bad idea.
No pictures. You know, as far as I can make out, writing is just like telling lies, only they wrap it up in fancy paper. You were about the world's greatest natural-born liar I ever met, so why don't you try it?
Jughead gives Spig a drag off his cigarette.
8 months.
Oh, quit, Billy.
8 months, and it seems like 8 years.
What are you crying about? You were 4-1 not to be here at all. And you were about 100-1 never to be puffing on a cigarette, and about 500-1 not to be propped up here like the Sultan of Pandemonium. And about 1,000,000-1 not to be able to sign your name on your paycheck, which, incidentally, after the allotment to your wife and the kids, came to $94. So I gave $10 to each of the charge accounts, which left us 14 fish. Here you are, sign it.
Jughead places the check under Spig's hand, and Spig starts a shaky signature.
I'm broke.
Broke? You are busted. Hey!
The young nurse enters with a vase of flowers.
Oh, well, hello, Alice. Or is it Agatha? Or is it Dolores? No, it couldn't be Dolores.
The nurse leaves, and Jughead places the flowers on the dresser. He goes back to Spig and watches him finish his signature.
Hey, that's not bad. That's the best yet. The best yet. Well, let's get to work.
Spig adjusts his mirror and spots the vase.
Who sent the flowers?
Sent what?
Those red roses.
Don't look at me. I'm not in the habit of sending flowers to men. Now, let me know where you can see it, all right. Okay, there? All right, now, man, what we got to do is concentrate,
huh? Was there a card in them?
No, there was no card. Okay, now, when you think...
Are you sure there was no card in them?
I told you there was no card. Use your brain for a generator, right? Let's push that power all the way down, right down here to these feet of nerves, right? Right in here. Okay? Got the idea? All right, now let's concentrate. Ah, that's it. That's the idea. It moved.
What?
Mr. Wee, the foot. Do it again.
What?
Move. Hey, no, doctor.
Jughead runs into the hall and kisses Nurse Crumley.
He moved his toe, Miss Crumley.
Jughead backs against a wall and faints. Now, Spig lies on a stretcher with his lower half submerged in a whirlpool bath. Two physical therapists massage his legs. Now, Spig sits up in bed. Jughead looks over his shoulder as he writes.
Why do you always have her husband coming through the door with a gun? Did the guy ever get away with it? I'd have been dead a long time ago.
Pincus enters with a bottle of liquor.
You're late.
Here you are, right off the boat.
Great dog. Ha, ha.
Hi, Mr. Weed. Gee, you look great. Just great.
Thanks.
Sitting up in bed and everything? Still writing up stories? Arab shikes? Moira?
Pincus leans in and reads Spig's paper. Pincus gives Spig a wink. Spig stops writing and eyes the young sailor as he continues reading. At the dresser, Jughead ties the new liquor bottle to a coat hanger and adds it to his collection behind the mirror. Later, Nurse Crumley and the two doctors watch over Spig in bed. Spig struggles to raise his left foot an inch from the mattress. They give him an encouraging smile as he lets it down. He tries his other foot. It rises a few inches off the bed. Nurse Crumley looks from the gray-haired doctor to Spig with wide eyes.
Now I believe in miracles.
That's all that happens. Except there.
He nods to a pile of paper.
What's that, Spig?
20 for 20. 20 stories, 20 rejections. I'm batting 0-0-0.
But you're batting.
Let's have it straight, Doc. You gonna retire me?
I'm afraid I am.
But we've got some good news for you, Spig.
Good news.
The doctor nods to a nurse who opens the door. Jughead pushes in a high-backed wheelchair.
Here you are, sir. Wheels for legs.
Spig stares at the chair with a furrowed brow. Nurse Crumley smiles at him, then faces the doctor.
Doctor, permission, please.
Miss Crumley has made a request which is strictly against naval regulations. But if my colleague concurs...
Oh, by all means, Doctor.
Permission granted.
Thank you, Doctor. This is elderberry wine that my aunt made back in Wisconsin, especially for this occasion.
Oh, Miss Crumley, thanks. Thanks.
The nurse hands him the bottle and wipes a tear from her cheek. Smiling, she gives him a quick salute and turns away. Spig looks at Jughead, who turns his head and looks up innocently. Later, Jughead wheels Spig down the hall, followed by three nurses, the two doctors, and two old patients. They all grin as Jughead merrily chomps on his cigar. As Jughead and Spig turn a corner, the others stop and watch them go. Now, Jughead wheels Spig onto a sunny porch. Spig takes a deep breath and smiles peacefully.
Wind, sky, sea.
And elderberry wine.
Simple things, eh, Jughead?
Sheer poetry. Now, Mr. Weed, sit back and close your eyes.
What for?
As I said so.
Jughead turns Spig around.
Take a look.
A long aircraft carrier sits in the ocean in front of them.
Saratoga.
First real carrier.
Yep. Pretty, isn't it?
She's a beautiful lady.
A squadron of 12 planes in three separate formations flies over the big gray ship. Jughead turns Spig's chair to follow their path. They grin as they watch the plane soar across the cloudless blue sky. Jughead leans his arm on the back of Spig's chair. Spig smiles and holds his gaze on the passing airplanes.
Who's upstairs?
Mr. Price. That's his squadron. They've been out in maneuvers.
Spig's grin fades.
Take me back.
What?
I said take me back.
Jughead glances up at the planes, then down to Spig.
You say, Mr. Wade?
Now in the hall, patients and staff watch as Jughead places tape on the floor.
Okay, Arizona, let's go! Right there, hold it right there.
Jughead helps move Spig's braced feet from his chair to the floor.
All right, so up you go now. One!
He and Pincus help Spig stand and place crutches under his arms. They move the chair back, and Spig stands by himself.
All right, so here's yesterday's mark. Now let's try and pass that one today.
He points to the tape marker about 7 feet away.
Come on, pick him up. Lay him down. That's it. One. Let's try with the other one.
Leaning on his crutches, Spig drags his foot
try
forward.
Try with the other one. Stand on it, so don't sit with the crutches. Stand up on him. Come on.
One more
pick him up. Lay him. Shut up, Pincus. Pick him up and lay him down. So just listen to me, Mr. Weed.
That's it.
That's it. One more.
I can't.
Come on. Sure you can. We haven't got any resistance to go at all. We did this yesterday. Come on.
Spig drags his foot forward halfway to the tape mark.
Come on, that's it. Stand on that one, Mr. Lee. Come, that's it. Don't cheat with those crutches, I'm telling you.
Spig forces his right foot forward, then his
left. Pick him up. Lay him down. That's it. Pick him up. Lay him down. Just say it to yourself. Pick it up and lay it down. Pick it up. That's it. And one more.
Spig reaches the tape.
Right, sir. Now, that's yesterday's mark.
He tapes another mark 3 feet further.
Oh, you're going to make it. Now, come on. Come on. You just listen to me, Mr. Weed. Come on. Pick him up. Lay him down. Come on. Pick him up. Take a deep breath. That's all right. One more, sir. One more.
His foot inches across the line. They hurriedly pull up the wheelchair and sit him down. The spectators clap as Jughead gives the weary patient a pat on the back. Now the Saratoga aircraft carrier sits majestically on the ocean. Spig looks at it from his bed through a pair of binoculars, then sets them down.
Hiya, Spig.
Hey, John Dale.
How are you, boy?
Home is the sailor.
Yeah, you're looking good. You're looking as stout as a mule.
Oh, thank you. I'm walking, or toddling.
Yeah? Say, I brought you some flowers.
Red roses?
Well, sure, red roses.
You brought them for me?
Yeah.
Thanks.
Spig notices three stripes on his sleeve.
Hey, what's this? You finally made it. Congratulations. We're going to have to celebrate that and wet them down.
Maybe we better wait till I get them paid for. Say, Spig, did you see her out there?
Yeah. I saw her.
She's a beaut, ain't she?
She sure is.
Travis wanted me to tell you, Spig, you helped us get that ship. You can help us again. We need a dozen more just like her.
What do you want me to do, go back to studying?
No. But yesterday a man came down from Hollywood asking about a carrier movie. He asked the old man dumped him in my lap. Well, I was looking around for the next lap to put him in when I remembered what you once said about getting the public on our side, getting them to help us out with the money men in Congress. Well, I figure a lot of the public could go to see a good movie about carriers. So I tossed him a couple of bones, and he wants to talk to you.
He wants me to write about carriers?
Why not?
Well, how does he know I can write?
Well, he knows he can't.
Yeah, but I'm a writer without a reader.
That's not exactly what I told him.
Meanwhile, Jughead and Pincus joyfully stride down the hospital hall. As Johnny helps Big into his wheelchair, they enter.
That's good.
Hold on to your hat and cross your fingers, Mr. Well, hi, Mr. Price.
Hi. He checks out his sleeve.
Oh, congratulations. Your uncle get reelected?
Uh-huh.
Go ahead, the mayor.
Here goes, Mr. Frankweed Jr. That's a bill, Mr. Frankweed. Hey, Bill Melford Austin Carson.
No, not that.
Mr. Frankweed Jr.
Pincus shows him an envelope.
What is it? Another rejection?
It's got a different envelope, sir.
And they didn't send the story back this time.
Open it up.
Open it up.
No, you open it.
Johnny takes the letter from Pincus and opens it.
Pay to the order of Frank Weed
Jr. $100. I told you, if you got the husband out of there with the gun, you'd get lucky.
$100. We're rich.
May I be the first to congratulate you, sir?
Me too, sir. Congratulations.
Hey, this calls for a celebration. How about a drink?
I couldn't be any party to that, sir. That's against the regulation.
Under the circumstances.
Pincus shows him the flower box.
Would you like these in a vase, sir?
No. Just leave them right here.
As they open the box, Jughead hands them each a small paper cup.
To the first story.
To Mr. Price's stripe.
And the red roses.
Pretty good liar, aren't you, Johnny? And three swell guys.
They drink. Now in a gated office, a woman sits at a desk reading. Spig enters in a gray suit. With canes braced against his legs, he approaches.
I'm Commander Weed, I think, Miss...
I'm sorry, but Mr. Dodge...
Looking up from her book, the woman peers at Spig. She rises and opens the gate.
I believe he's expecting you, Commander Weed.
He enters.
Thank you.
Spig hobbles toward the office door behind her desk. The secretary opens the door to an office fashioned in a rich Western style. Four Oscars stand on display.
Commander Weed is here.
Blasted Stonewall, I told you I was in conference. I'm not supposed to be disturbed under any circuit.
Dodge springs from a nap, dons sunglasses, and peers at Spig in the doorway.
Oh.
He stands and waves Spig toward him.
Come on in.
As the secretary leaves, Spig makes his way toward the couch.
Come in, come in. It's good to see you.
Dodge extends his hand, then stops and pats Big on the shoulder.
Gotta watch that couch. Got a hidden spring in it someplace that surprises us sometimes.
As Spig settles onto the couch, Dodge picks up a walking stick from the table with the Oscars and peers at the commander. He grabs his pipe and sits beside Spig.
Watch that door.
Spig looks toward the door. Dodge hands him a shot glass.
Familiar?
Dodge unscrews the end commander. Of the walking stick.
I find that about this time of the afternoon, a little drink's very good for you. Good for the pup, you know?
He removes a flask from the stick.
I used to make excuses when I drank in the afternoon, too.
Dodge pours whiskey.
Funny thing, a man always makes the loudest excuses to himself.
Yeah, that's a fact. That sure is a fact. All right, here, Commander. There you are.
They drink. Dodge slips the flask back into the stick.
Commander of a portable typewriter.
That can be a lot harder to handle than a battleship.
I found that out.
Well, I know you haven't had much experience writing. And none at all in pictures. I've heard about you. It all sounded like you were just the man I wanted for a story about the Navy. I don't want a story just about ships and planes. I want a story about the officers and...
And the men that run them.
That's exactly it. For example, do you happen to know any chief petty officers?
Do I? Hand me that cane.
Sure, yeah.
No, I'm kidding.
Dodge puts down the walking stick.
Well, I want this story from a pen dipped in salt water, not dry martinis. You know what I mean?
Yeah, damn the martinis. Full speed ahead.
Would you like to take a crack at it?
That's why I'm here.
Well, good. Come on, let's go. Can I give you a hand?
No, I'm all right.
Oh, sorry, sir.
As Spig hoists himself up, Dodge meets his secretary in the reception area.
I didn't know this man had been injured. Why didn't you tell me? Well, give him that officer across the way and see that he gets everything he wants.
Spig joins them.
Now, Commander, what do they call you? Spig, isn't it?
That's right.
You mind if I call you Spig?
Not at all.
Christmas Jackson. Stonewall Jackson, Commander Wheat.
They shake hands.
Hello, Commander.
You mind if I call you Stonewall?
Not at all.
Stonewall's been with me for 22 years. She's my barometer. She likes your script, I throw it away. Wouldn't know what to do without her. Now go to work. Oh. You didn't ask about your salary.
Well, I figure you'll pay me what I'm worth. What you have to worry about is that I'm worth what you pay me.
It's a deal.
Well, wait a minute. Is that all? Well,
what do you need? Pencil and paper?
Well, what do I write about?
People. Navy people.
Dodge returns to his office and closes the door. Spig glances toward his, then back toward Dodge's door. He makes his way toward his office, passing portraits of Western heroes hanging on the wall. Now, in a smoky screening room, black and white footage shows Navy sailors in a bar.
Hey, what's the big idea?
A sailor blows the head of his beer on another.
That off, will you? That was the idea. That was on the level.
Certainly it was. I came down here to knock your block off.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
The offended sailor throws a drink in the burly one's face and a fist fight ensues. At a table at the front row of seats in the screening room, Dodge puffs on his pipe beside Spig. Spig places a cigarette in his lips and pats his pockets. Dodge hands him a book of matches and Spig lights up. As he starts to pocket the matches, Dodge beckons and Spig returns them. On screen, the barroom brawl comes to an end and the reel stops. As the lights come up, Stonewall politely sees other viewers out of the room. A producer faces Dodge.
Nice work.
Tell George it's a great job of directing. Congratulations, Commander.
How'd you like that kid with beers?
Right. Sign him up.
The producer leaves Spig and Dodge seated alone.
Spig, I've been thinking about that title, Hell Divers. Great title. Of course, we'll have to take it up with the Hayes office. You can't say hell on the screen, you know.
Now, on a patio, Spig writes as Dodge lays back.
Listen, Spig, you might just as well face it. Writing is the loneliest job in the world. There's nobody there but you. And I'll give you 50, I'll give you 101, your play won't be a success. You're not listening to me.
You blame me?
Not a bit.
Dodge picks up a book.
Spig, I know the stage, I know the screen. I've toured every tank town from East Burlap, Maine, to West Burlap, Oregon. I even played in this thing once.
The Odyssey.
Ulysses?
Yep.
You played in Ulysses?
Bowling Green, Kentucky. I played Robert E. Lee. Look, Spig, you got a beautiful home here, half paid for, half empty. But no, you got to go to New York and do a play. I'll give you 1,000 to 1. You have the worst flop that ever hits Broadway.
Now, a marquee reads, Ceiling Zero, a new play by Frank Weed. Well-dressed people exit a theater. Two police officers escort Spig to a waiting taxi as others direct the crowd. At the taxi, the policemen open the back door for Spig.
Nice going, Mr. Weed.
Thanks, Joe.
In the taxi, Spig mops his brow and sets his canes aside. The driver turns around.
Looks like he got a hit.
Jughead.
Yes, sir. Carson, late of the U.S. Navy.
I thought you were running a chicken farm.
I was running a chicken farm, but I give it up. Chickens get up too early. Early to bed, early to rise. Might as well be dead.
Jughead puffs his cigar.
Big play right now, huh? Rich as creosote. Never could find time to drop a guy a line, though. Not even a Christmas card.
Okay, Carson. So I'm a stuffed shirt.
That's right.
So I'm a horse's rump.
Correct.
Well, that was yesterday. Where are we going now?
We're going to our saloon. Where else?
He drives off. Later.
This chicken ranch of mine was 6 miles from my nearest neighbor. She was a Polish lady that weighed 258 pounds. And when she started looking good to me, I blew. What are you going to do with all your loot?
You know who it's for.
For who?
The kids. Who else?
He shows
How
photos.
They doing?
Well, they're both in school. But I'm going to get them out there with me.
Jughead looks at the teenage girls. One photo shows them in tasseled mortarboards.
Wow. How old can we get? You ever hear from her?
Spig pockets the photos.
She's doing fine. Has a job in San Francisco, and she's happy.
Is she married?
Yes, to me.
Well, you're going to get the kids. Why don't you get her? Buy yourself a yacht, take a trip around the world before it blows up. I'll sail it for you.
I'm no good for her.
He picks up his canes.
I can remember when they gave you 2 chances to live. Slim and none. But you made it. And I can remember you had 2 crutches and $14, which you parlayed into a fortune. Of course, that's before you became fat and bald-headed. Them days, all you ever asked for was a chance.
Do you think I've got a chance with her?
Well, what makes you think you ain't?
Spig shrugs. Their beer glasses are almost empty.
Come on.
Jughead digs into his pocket.
Where are you going?
We're going to the airport. I'm going to put you on a plane for San Francisco. After that, you're on your own. Here, give me that. Don't you know rich guys like you never pick up a tab? Come on, we got 46 minutes to catch that plane.
Spig stands, puts on his hat, and follows his buddy out. Later, an airliner flies at twilight. The Golden Gate Bridge stretches over San Francisco Bay. In a bedroom, Min puts her purse and gloves into a bureau.
Just a minute!
Min shuts the drawer and opens the bedroom door. On the other side of her living room, Spig braces himself on his canes.
Hi.
Hi, Min.
They gaze at each other, each standing in a doorway. Then Min slowly steps forward. Min wears a dark skirt suit and a white blouse. She has a silver streak in her red hair just over her forehead. Spig swings his weight from cane to cane as he moves closer to Min. Min smiles and goes to him. She hugs him, then steps back and pats his arms.
Big playwright.
Huh. I was going to call you, and then I decided to get cute again.
Here, let me take your coat.
As Spig holds both canes in his right hand, Min moves behind him with a puzzled look and helps him slip his left shoulder from his dark blue overcoat. Helping him with the other side, she feels the material.
Cashmere.
As she folds the coat and sets it aside, Min caresses its softness. Spig sits in an upholstered armchair and struggles to lift his feet onto the ottoman. Min rushes to his side and drops to her knees.
Here, let me help.
No,
Their eyes meet.
Sure. Go ahead.
Min picks up his canes from the floor and hands them to her husband. He gazes at the back of her head as he allows her to lift his legs and position them on the ottoman. Min smiles cheerfully as she faces him.
Well, what are we going to talk about?
You heard from the kids?
Sure, I hear from them every week. That's how I know about you. Your pictures, your plays, your books. Somehow or other, you always manage to stand out in their letters.
She brings him a large picture folder.
Second year college.
Yeah.
Min pulls up the coffee table and sits on its edge.
Spig. You mean an awful lot to them. Why don't you have them with you for a while?
I want to. That's one of the reasons I'm here.
I think you should. I think they need you.
And I need them, too. I need more than that. I need you.
Clasping Spig's canes, Min stares.
Hard to believe?
She arches her eyebrows, gazes gently at him, then tilts her head.
A little.
Just believe it, Min. Don't analyze it or take it apart or look at it too hard. I've done all that. Just believe it.
Gazing into his eyes, Min considers, then blinks and cocks her head.
I don't know, Spig. I've made a new life for myself. At least I can be what I am and what I want to be. I've got somewhere.
Sure. You're somewhere. The kids are somewhere and I'm somewhere. But we're really nowhere, unless we're together. If it isn't a family, it's nothing.
She looks at him, then drops her eyes. She stands and moves behind the armchair, hangs the canes on its back, and glides her fingertips along the gray hair on his head.
I don't know. Maybe it's too late. Maybe...
Min slowly strokes his head with the palm of her hand, then lowers her lips and kisses his balding crown. She presses her forehead to him and pets the side of his head again. Min lifts her eyes to the apartment's view of the sunny bay. She peers through the Venetian blinds and slowly moves around Spig's chair. She wheels around and buries her sobbing face in Spig's shoulder. Now a mailbox reads, Frank Weed, in front of a cottage door in need of paint. Two newspapers bounce off the door. Inside, Spig descends the stairs in pajamas and a robe.
O'Fallon!
A model aircraft carrier is in his living room.
Brady! Brady O'Fallon!
The widow O'Fallon, if you please.
Well, what are you all dressed up for? Where are you going?
To Mass on the Sabbath, and it wouldn't do you any harm someday.
Perhaps you're going to confession, too.
I might. What put that in your evil mind, pray?
This room. In the kitchen. In the bar. And the ashes.
He dumps an ashtray and wipes the counter.
And the dust. Unmitigated sloppiness.
I'm guilty.
We're both guilty. But we're gonna reform, O'Fallon. Because in just a few seconds, I'm going over, pick up that phone, call my wife, and she's coming here to live with us.
Herself?
Herself.
You mean your wife is coming here to live with
us? She is.
Oh, God bless you. And God bless her for her foolishness. Oh, the poor girl. I'll save me beads for her.
Mrs. O'Fallon leaves. Spig hobbles over to a bar stool and puts a telephone in his lap. Keeping his two canes between his knees, he dials, then puts the phone back down.
Long distance? I want San Francisco. Sutter, 23969. Crestview, 4510. How long will it wait? Yes, ma'am. I'll be right here. Thank you.
Spig hangs up, smiling. He moves over to a leather couch and leans on the back of it. Reaching into his bathrobe pocket, he pulls out a pack of cigarettes and places one between his lips. Spig lights it with a flip-top lighter and stares out a sunny window as he puffs. Mrs. O'Fallon rushes back in.
The radio. The Japanese, Pearl Harbor.
What are you talking about?
The newsboy just told me. The Japanese bombs.
Turn on the radio.
She crosses in front of him to a cabinet radio, opens it, and turns it on.
...appeared over Diamond Head and launched an attack on the giant U.S. naval base at Pearl Harbor. The planes appeared utterly without warning, apparently coming from aircraft carriers which had been moved forward during the night. The enemy craft were over the island of Oahu for 1 hour and 20 minutes, bombing the naval base and nearby Hickam Field. The White House has just announced that one old battleship capsized, several others were hit, and a destroyer was sunk. American casualties were said to total 3,000, of which 1,500 were killed.
Spig moves slowly back to the bar stool by the windows. He leans against it and picks up the phone receiver, then rests his head and shoulder against the wall.
Hello? Min? Did you hear it?
In her apartment, Min nods.
I just turned off the radio.
She listens nervously.
Of course you'll try, Spig.
Well, I'll try. You know I've got to try, man. I'll go there. To Washington. Talk to them. Maybe they won't have me, I don't know.
Min's blue eyes glisten.
If they don't have you, Spig, I will.
That's all I need.
It's all I've got, Spig. I said that's all I've got.
Her lips begin to tremble and she takes a breath.
Bye, Spig.
Ma'am? Well, goodbye, sailor.
She hangs up and turns to a living room full of suitcases. She picks up her purse and gloves and hurls them against the wall. Then she strips off her jacket and throws it. Wiping her nose with the back of her hand, Min crosses to a highly polished wooden record player and opens the lid. She leans against it and turns it on. As she turns away, the record player spits out records. She throws a suitcase at it.
Stop! 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 Stop!
Now, a balding and gray-haired man smiles across a desk at Spig.
And you want active duty? Combat?
I've never been under fire, you know that, sir.
Are you looking for a thrill?
Just a fight.
Spig, let's talk like what we are, old friends. Old, I said. Even a sailor must do it, get old.
Like Nimitz, Halsey, and Pete Mitcher?
Spig, you know better than this. A war gets fought at a desk just as hard as it does on a flat top. It gets won and lost by logistics. And I'll let you in on something. Every plan that we ever had is down at the bottom of Pearl Harbor. Yeah, we lost our Sunday shirt.
That bad?
Yeah, that bad.
Jack lights a cigarette and motions toward his desk.
Now, you see this? Well, this is sort of a flat top. I'm sticking my neck out. You want one, you can have one.
Spig nods, looking at the desk.
I'll try it for size, Admiral, and thanks.
The name's still Jack. Farrington, get him a uniform, a desk, and a drink. He's going to go to work for the first time in his life.
Aye, sir.
The young officer takes Big's elbow.
I'm all right.
Now, Navy men watch black and white film of a smoking aircraft carrier.
The Carrier Hornet. Notice the hits by enemy action. Three kamikazes. Two hits. One forward. One midship. Not a chance. Notice the abandoned ship drill.
In a smoky screening room, Spig holds a microphone to his mouth.
Morale excellent. We have only one carrier left, gentlemen. Repeat. One carrier left. Enterprise.
Well, more on the way.
Well, they won't help. They won't help now.
Every battle we fight depends on the big carriers.
Yeah, but there's a limiting factor. Planes and crews.
Spig chews his glasses.
Can't carry enough. There ought to be some way to keep them in action.
Yeah, but how?
Well, it's a simple thing. It keeps going around in my head like a forgotten name. What do you do when you're stuck like that, Levi?
Well, I go through the alphabet backwards, sir.
I take a long, cold beer.
Back in Hollywood, we cut to the 7th Cavalry.
Jack smiles. As the room full of uniformed men stare at the screen, Spig shakes his head and taps his glasses on his notepad. Now, miniature battleships sit arranged in formation on a huge blue sea map. Spig sits on a cot in the darkened war room, holding a lit flashlight. He switches it off and gazes at the map. Looking to a far wall, he shines the flashlight beam on a full-sized wall map of the world. Tiny Japanese flags with labels are taped to an area of the Pacific Ocean. Spig turns off the flashlight and sets it aside. He puts a cigarette in his mouth and strikes a match. He lights his smoke and waves the match out, then pulls his legs onto the cot. Spig rests his head on a pillow and stares at the ceiling. The war room door opens and the light comes on. As an officer holds the door, an arm with a striped sleeve pokes in, followed by its owner.
Johnny!
They shake hands and hug.
I've been looking high and low for you.
Well, what do you know?
Yeah, my uncle got reelected again.
You got your command.
Task force.
Combat, you lucky dog.
Say, and you, I have been calling your hotel, and you haven't checked in for 3 days. What are you doing, sleeping on this deck?
Well,
say, now, I've got 3 hours to kill, and I got a Jeep outside. Come on, and I'll buy you the tallest, coldest beer.
You got a what outside?
A Jeep.
That's it. That's a forgotten name. Jeep. Jeep carriers. It was there all the time. I knew it'd be simple once we thought of it. Hand me that Liberty ship. Give me a chair. Drag up a chair.
Spig sits and starts writing.
That's it, Johnny. Jeep carriers. That's the limiting factor.
Spig, I haven't got too much time.
Yeah?
Johnny smiles and pats Spig on the shoulder.
So long, partner.
So long.
Johnny leaves, the door closes, and the room goes dim.
That's what we've been needing. Johnny! John Dale!
Spig gets up from his paperwork and limps to the door. He looks out into the hall, then back at the table map. He hobbles over to it. Spig places the toy-like ship behind some of the other models. Later, in dress blue uniforms, Spig and other sailors occupy the war room. Several senior officers enter and study a wall map.
Soya,
Akagi,
Kaga.
I know all that.
Two of the officers stride over to Spig.
Weed?
Yes, sir.
Let's have it.
Well, these big combat carriers are still the spear point of battle, but now backing them up, we have these Jeep carriers loaded with planes and crews. If the big carrier loses a plane, she radios back, and a replacement is immediately underway. The big carrier stays in action.
You can get this on paper?
Yes, sir.
I like it. Write it up.
Jack shakes Spig's hand.
Eureka.
As Jack follows the other officers out, the war room men stand at attention.
Cut me some orders, boy.
By a dock, daylight illuminates the steel rails, balconies, and hatches of a huge carrier. As Spig admires it, an officer greets him.
Welcome home, sailor.
Hello, Jack.
How you feeling?
Like an old fire horse.
Good.
Thanks for everything.
Thanks for nothing. Well, there she is. She's all yours. Oh, I want you to say hello to an old pal of yours.
Dodd!
How you,
fella? Oh, half man, half worm, half wet.
Well, I got the last chapter of a book. Come on, Spig. I'll show you to the royal suite.
Knock it off.
Spig and his friends ride a lift elevator up to the deck of the ship. As they get to the top, Spig notices someone saluting.
Sir.
Jughead. I don't believe it.
Spig steps off the lift.
How'd you wangle this?
Same as you. Drag, pull, juice. I know where the bodies are buried.
You buried them. Thanks, Jughead.
Jughead smiles proudly at his old friend.
So you finally made it. Come on, let me show you around. I got the crap game.
And everything else.
The four Navy men walk off. Later, a tugboat escorts the carrier out of the harbor. In an office with metal walls, Spig loosens his tie. Jughead lights a cigar.
You look a little beat up to me.
Yeah, too many soft years.
Living off the fat of the land, huh?
Well, a sea will bring it up.
Yeah, well, don't worry. I'll make a man out of you again.
And the next time you walk in that door, sailor, salute.
Aye, aye, sir.
Hey, wait, this is pretty nice, huh? You and me and... old Jock and the doc? All we need now is Pincus. Whatever happened to Pincus?
He made it. Back to the old Arizona.
Spig's smile fades.
Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. Hey, you know where we're going?
Got a general idea.
You're gonna see yourself some action, sailor.
There's all hands men your battle station.
Now, a battleship fires its cannons at a small island. On the aircraft carrier, pilots run to their planes.
Plenty of action. You're gonna see island grabbing the hard way. Step by step on the Tokyo Road. You'll see us pounding away with everything we've got.
and then pound them back at us with everything they've got.
On the ship, Spig watches a squadron of planes through binoculars. In the sky, bullets spray a Japanese fighter plane. The plane catches fire and goes into a spiraling dive. Flames stream from the plane's tail as it noses toward the ocean. The water reflects the fire and the plane plunges in. Elsewhere in the sky, two planes fire on a battleship below. A mountainous cloud of smoke and flame erupt from the ship. On the aircraft carrier, Spig's binoculars follow a plane as it soars over a smoking battleship. A second ship's automatic cannons fire on the plane, which crashes into another ship, igniting a fiery blast. Spig watches slack-jawed as an American plane belly skids onto the ocean surface. The plane floats, and the pilot starts to get out. Spig gets on his radio. The pilot walks out onto a wing and dives into the water. Now, another plane lands on the flight deck. Its wing smashes into part of the ship, and the plane breaks in two.
Crash on a flight deck! Crash on a flight deck!
Spig yells into his radio.
And then we'll see if your Jeep carriers can send replacement planes fast enough to keep the big carriers in their slugger. Because the big carriers are it, sailor. High, low, jacking again.
Spig watches as a plane takes off from the flight deck. Jughead turns to him, crossing his fingers. Spig smiles and checks his watch.
9:56. You owe me a Saba.
Jughead watches a plane land on the deck, then gives Spig a big grin and two thumbs up. Spig gives a thumbs up in return. Another plane lands, and the flight crew rushes out to it. Spig watches through his binoculars as a plane fires four missiles into a cloud of smoke. In the distance, more smoke billows up as blasts riddle the water. On the ship, the automatic cannons continue to fire, filling the horizon with gray smoke. Spig gapes and lowers his binoculars. Now, a plane lands on the flight deck and is stopped by an arrestor cable. The captain approaches Spig.
Good job, Spig. Swell show. We'd had your planet Tarawa, we could have saved so many casualties.
When are you going to get some sleep? You've been going for 54 hours straight.
I'll sleep after the party. The
party's as good as over.
And I'm as good as asleep right here.
Come on, Captain, make him go to bed.
Go to bed.
No, sir.
Here's the Oscar, sir.
The captain reads a clipboard.
Well, we've got him now. Listen to this, Jughead. Former resistance has collapsed on all fronts as of 12:42. Vigilance against diehard individual action will be maintained, but your commander is signaling Washington that Kwajalein is ours and signals each of you... Well done.
Clear path to the Marianas.
A clear path to bed for you.
I haven't even got under fire.
Well, try getting under the sheets. Come on, Captain, make it an order, will you?
That's an order, Spig.
I'll fix the coffee.
No cream, no sugar.
Spig lifts his braced legs. Later, below deck, Jughead goes to light a cigar.
All general quarters, all hands man your battle station.
Jughead drops the match and rushes into the hall. Up on deck, a plane heads right towards Spig. As the plane fires, Jughead throws Spig down and gets on top of him. Bullets riddle the side of the ship. Jughead falls limp, his back soaked with blood. As the plane crashes into a nearby ship, Spig rolls Jughead onto his side.
I guess I forgot to stick out my hand.
Jughead's eyes shut and he goes limp.
Jug!
Spig cradles his head.
Jughead!
In darkness, cannons fire, letting off a brilliant flash of orange. Hundreds of white and red tracer bullets stream across the night sky. Two at a time, missiles launch from the water like fireworks. As ships fire on a nearby island, smoke covers the trees. Later, sunlight streaks the horizon as the aircraft carrier sits on the peaceful sea. In the infirmary, Jughead sits up in bed with his chest wrapped in gauze. As he plays cards with a sailor, the door opens.
Wait a minute. This is a game you have to think, you know. Use my brain a little bit when you're playing.
Dan, hut!
Relax.
Hi.
Hi. Well, I had to get to battle. Brenner got you killed.
Man, I'm a Gemini. You can't kill me until after the 17th of the month.
Well, anyway, Frank Merriwell Jr. had to see action.
Ah, you did me a favor. I'm a wounded hero. They're even going to give me a medal. I got a month at Waikiki in the sun and the surf. Gin rummy. Gin. Those beautiful nurses. Hey, do you remember the nurse that you had in San Diego?
Miss Crumley.
I want you to meet her son.
Name was McGuffey, sir.
McGuffey Crumley. Put the Black King on the Red Ace. Even C-20 plays for me.
Is there anything you need?
Yeah. But you ain't got it out here.
Well, look, Jughead, I'm
trying to say is...
You don't look so good yourself. You want I should move over?
Yeah. Well,
Drop in and see a guy, will you?
Spig nods hesitantly.
Yeah.
Jughead puffs on his cigar.
Yeah.
Spig opens his mouth to speak, then stops and bows his head. Jughead watches as his friend slowly makes his way to the door. With a furrowed brow, he takes a deep breath and looks thoughtfully at the cigar in his hand. In the hall, Spig holds on to the sides of a hatchway and struggles to lift his foot over the bottom threshold. As he sets his foot down, he cringes and grabs his chest. He falls to the ground. Now, white foam splashes against the ship's hull as it cuts through the water. In the infirmary, the blonde doctor checks a long paper readout, then hands it to Spig, who wears a bathrobe.
There it is, Spig.
Looks like a drunken grasshopper. No good?
Lousy.
How long does it say?
3 days, 3 months, 3 years.
Spig takes out a cigarette.
Okay.
Why not?
The doctor lights it for him.
I'd like to have you do me a favor, Johnny.
If I can.
Even if you can't.
Try me.
A lot of people went to some trouble to get me out here.
I know.
I don't want them to blame themselves.
Why should they?
I don't know why, I just don't want it.
What do you want?
You to snip a little red tape.
Go on.
I'd like to go over the side quietly. Retire.
Fatigue?
Yeah. Yeah. Let them think I was beat up.
All right, Spig.
Now, Spig sits at his desk and slides papers into a briefcase. As he fits them in, his gaze wanders to a blue folder. With a cigarette dangling from his lips, Spig opens it. Each side frames a black and white photo. On one side, his daughters wear graduation caps and gowns. On the other, Min sits on a dock wearing a bathing suit. The water begins to glisten as Spig remembers. Now on the dock, Min poses for Spig, who holds a brownie camera at his chest. She gives him her cutesy Miss America flourish and a bright grin. In his office, Spig leans back and looks off with a smile. In another flashback, he and Min ride in their roadster. Spig slows the car to a stop and grins at Min. They sit up on the back of their seats and look over their shoulders. As their eyes meet, they smile affectionately. Spig draws Min close for a kiss. She gives him a peck, and he pulls her in for more. They wrap their arms around each other and kiss passionately. In his office, Spig stares off, unblinking. In another flashback, Min and Spig stroll side by side, each pushing a baby carriage with a bright-eyed toddler riding inside. Min smiles contentedly as Spig flicks away a cigarette. In his office, Spig's smile fades, and he adds the blue folder to his briefcase. Now on deck, two sailors watch khaki-uniformed officers conferring by a plane.
Will you get a load of all the brass over there?
Yeah, army brass, too.
The group of officers shake hands and head off. Later, the doctor and Spig ride the lift elevator to the deck. A soldier yells to his squad.
Freeze that! Harm!
The soldiers hold their rifles vertically in front of them. Spig limps past them and salutes with his cane. The captain waits for him on the side of the deck. Behind the captain, two lines of sailors stand at attention. The sailors salute as Spig approaches.
Well, Spig?
Thanks for the ride, Jock.
Good luck, fella. That'll do at the side.
The sailors leave and some officers take their place. Spig stands between the two lines.
Order! Harm!
Behind him, the soldiers let down their rifles. Spig's eyes shift to Johnny, who stares straight ahead. Spig takes a deep breath and his lips tighten. His teary gaze moves to Captain Hazard standing at attention. Spig glances down each line, then takes a few steps forward. He turns to face Johnny, who stares straight ahead, avoiding Spig's gaze.
Johnny?
Johnny swallows hard and blinks.
Thank you, sir.
Spig turns around and faces Hazard.
Shorty.
Hiya, Spig.
No cake?
No cakes.
And no swimming pools. Good luck, fella.
Johnny steps over to a small chair supported by a metal cage. A sailor takes his canes as two others help him into a life vest. Spig takes a seat, and the crew buckles him in. The two lines of officers salute. Spig looks at them, his eyes sparkling. His gaze moves from Johnny, who stands firmly at attention, to Hazard, who gives him a wink. Spig nods faintly. With a misty gaze, he gives the men a salute.
So long.
Some crewmen help guide Spig's chair as a winch lifts it over the railing. A band plays farewell. The chair hangs from a pulley system attached to two ropes strung between the aircraft carrier and another ship. Spig holds his canes on his lap as the crew lets go of his chair. As Spig slides down the ropes, Jughead approaches a portal in the infirmary. He opens it up and gazes at his friend. Below Spig, white-tipped waves flow along the moving hull of the receiving ship. Jughead takes the cigar from his trembling lips and blinks back tears. As Spig nears the neighboring ship's railing, crew members help pull him in. At his open portal, Jughead shakes his head sadly and tosses his cigar into the water below. Across the waves, the neighboring ship's crew pulls Spig's chair to the deck. Words appear. The end. The Wings of Eagles, made in Hollywood, USA, by Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.